You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles is brought to you by Tethered, Wasp, Vortex, Code Blue Sense, Huntworth, and Reveal Trail Cameras, including Full Sneak Gear. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. Enjoy this episode. All right, we're recording.
We are recording. We got to set this up.
I went on a little bit of a scroll today on the gram, right? Okay. You pick up the gram and you're like, I'm just going to do one quick thing on here. Next thing you know, 30 minutes have gone by and you're just fucking going and you're going.
Worst for me is I picked up my phone to do something completely not related to Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I need to go text somebody. Yep. And then 15 minutes later, I put my phone down. And I was like, I never did the thing that I picked up my phone to do in the first place. I just scrolled exactly. Instagram Reels for 15 minutes. I don't even know why.
Exactly. So anyway, while I am in my scroll, right, I'm getting everything. Like, something about today, everything that is right and wrong within the hunting industry and community and non-residents versus residents and fucking crossbows and shit. It was just like all right there.
You had your algorithm finally tuned today.
And so I gotta talk to somebody today, because I didn't want to do a podcast where I just did it myself, and I wanted to get somebody else who's in some way, shape, or form kind of involved in what I do the same kind of way. So I text three people all at the same time. All right. You're the first one to respond, and you're like, dude, I'm at work. And I'm like, fuck work, dude. Take a break.
I believe that's exactly what you said.
Take a break and let's just talk. Let's talk it out. And you're like, yeah, dude, okay. I'm in.
All right, let's go.
So here we are. Okay.
Yeah, you caught me in between like meetings. My life is just a series of meetings anymore. And you caught me in like a bit of a window between meetings. And I had a pretty productive yesterday and this morning. So I was like, I don't think I have any urgent things that like I need to do right now. Like, a couple things I got to do before the end of the day, but nothing that needs to be done at 2:03 p.m. on a Thursday.
Exactly. And here we are, right?
And here we are.
First off, I want to say thank you.
Of course. And when Dan calls, you answer. That's the way it works.
Oh, no, the more accurate is when Dan calls, Justin Czar answers, because I've tried doing this with other people before and they just, like, yeah, dude, what's up? I'm busy. No one cares. All right. So you got like hunt quietly. You got like copper plated sixes. You got, I haven't heard from this guy in a while, but like the make hunting great again guy.
Yep.
Right.
Their identity is just shitting all over everyone.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Those guys. Then you have guys like us who celebrate the outdoors. We talk about it. We hype it up. We share our stories. We're very positive in, you know, really, I don't know, like, I love deer hunting. And so everything that I do, how I've set this whole thing up, is my love for deer hunting and bow hunting and my story is kind of like how it saved me and how all this stuff. Right. And so
sure.
We have this clash right now. And I wanted to get you on and get your ideas. Cause you tell the truth. Like you will not hold back on your opinions on some of this stuff. And we got this whole thing. Now we got like tags. They're increasing, right? I believe Michigan right now, there's a bill on their desk where they're going to be raising prices for everybody, dramatically, like 40% on some of these. Everybody.
The annoying thing about what I've seen with some of those, and this is a clever trick that like the people, the reporters, the media, the whoever, the people who are enraged by the stuff like to use, because they like to talk in percentages mm-hmm. when the actual dollar amounts aren't very big. So it's like you have a $50 tag, let's just say, and it's going up, you know, 40%. You know, so it's increasing by $20 or something like that. Yeah. You know, so it went from 50 to 70. And they're like, oh my God, it's a 40% increase. And I'm like, dude, it's $20. Like, relax. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal. It's just a manipulation of numbers to make it seem like this egregious thing. But oh my God, the cost of everything in the world has gone up and continues to go up. Why we would think that, like, our hunting and fishing licenses wouldn't also increase at some point in time? Are we just morons? Like, what do we expect?
Yeah. And so part of that, right, obviously, in order to manage these lands, these public lands, in order to manage the wildlife populations and do the wildlife biology and the tests and the science and having these people employed, that all of it takes money. Tractors cost money, supplies cost money. And so obviously I just say, along with everything else, prices are going to go up. Right. I mean, that to me is kind of
they never go down, Dan.
Exactly.
They only go one way.
Exactly. And so what I'm getting at is, like, in Iowa, I'm a resident. I pay $28.50, I believe it is, for my hunting license as a resident. And then an additional $28.50 for my archery tag. I believe that's what it is. Plus a habitat stamp and things like that. Yeah. So I'm paying just over $50, $56.
Yeah, I think we're about the same here.
Yeah, to bow hunt in Iowa. The greatest state for bow hunting whitetails, okay? I'm like, I look at something like that, I go, dang, I'm getting away with murder over here. Right. And then we got some states out west where, man, I think residents are paying like under $100 for an elk tag in certain states. And then we have this discrepancy, right? And here's another turmoil conversation that happens. And we have, like, the residents are getting pissed at the non-residents because there's all this pressure. Meanwhile, the residents or non-residents are funding pretty much all of the wildlife organizations that are there because of the non-resident applications and tag costs. And so now we have another scenario where everybody is infighting. And, and so now we have, I saw something where a Utah elk tag is now, was it $2,400 or it's over $2,000 for a non-resident elk tag.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. And so how do we get along on a scenario like that?
I don't know, man. Is there ever a get along? You know, you're not from around here. I don't like you. I mean, I don't know. Do you change that, human nature? I was listening to like a Chris Williamson podcast the other day, and he was talking about just like human nature, and that, like, we've, since like the dawn of mankind, we've been united by fighting against outgroups, right? Mm-hmm. You're not like us. So that's what unites us together, is fighting against people that aren't like us.
That's
right.
And
that's like just a human nature thing. You know, right. I don't know that you ever fix that entirely. I think obviously there has to be some balance between, like, obviously number of tags sold and cost and the budget that it takes to operate these programs and, you know, making sure that things aren't too pressured and you're not, you know, harming the wildlife, while at the same time you're providing residents with an adequate opportunity and they're not just getting squashed by all the non-residents, because that sucks too. You know, so it's a delicate balance, man. And I don't think you can ever please everybody, right? Somebody somewhere is going to be pissed off. And the problem, you know, is we all have social media and, you know, we can go online and be as vocal about our anger as ever. And that seems to be what a lot of people want to do is just go and bitch and moan about everything, you know, online. Instead of what I hate is when people go bitch and moan about stuff, but then they don't offer any sort of tangible solution. Right. They're just complaining. And it's like, okay, well, tell me what you're going to do about it or what we should do about it. You know, they just like to freaking hear themselves bitch and moan.
So I'm gonna bitch to you, and then
Oh.
I want you to tell me if I'm overreacting or if I have
Okay.
maybe a valid spot. Okay, in Iowa, we
Yeah.
have less than 2% of our ground is public.
Correct.
We are in a state where we are the Mecca, and when you are the Mecca of something, and not just the entire state of Iowa, but like Eastern Iowa, Southern Iowa, that is the Mecca. Everything north of, let's say, like Interstate 80, they might have some sprinkled in good deer hunting in there, but a majority of
Sick.
that is all agriculture. So I would say
Yes.
you cut the state of Iowa in half, and then you're talking about the rest is like this premier whitetail ground. We have great rules and regulations that allow deer to, like, we have a higher age class, which allows deer to have bigger antlers. People love bigger antlers, and they want to do that however they can. Okay, they want to find a way to hunt that, and whether you call that a natural, like a commodity or a natural resource, whatever, however you want to talk about it, I think it's a natural resource, but people treat it like a commodity sometimes. Meanwhile, I hunt on a couple pieces of property where I'm lucky to have it, right? I got lucky. I kind of fell into it. And I am the only Iowa resident who hunts on probably one, two, three, four, five, like, oh, I want to say close to 5,000 acres. The rest are all owned and hunted by non-resident hunters. Okay.
Okay.
And so,
But as a non-resident hunter in that area, they can only get a tag every 6 or 7 years for archery and every, what, 2 or 3 for firearms, I think, something like that.
I think you can get a late season tag,
Yeah.
like a late season tag more often, or a shotgun tag more often.
Yeah.
But for the coveted archery tag in that
Sure.
area, you're looking at 5 years, maybe more. And so I'm sitting here going, man, look at all the Iowa hunters who have been displaced in this area because of non-residents coming in and buying land.
So non-residents are coming in and buying land that they can't even hunt more than every couple of years.
I
So,
would.
dude, this is like it's crazy timing that you called me because I spent last weekend in southern Iowa scouting public ground, and I met a guy. We stayed at a little Airbnb, and I met a guy that was out burning fields right behind where we stayed, and he used to own the property that he was burning, and now he just manages it for a guy that lives in Michigan that owns the land. And I was like, I can't believe somebody would buy this ground and only be able to hunt it every 6 years. Like that just seems insane to me. Like I didn't really think that was a problem in Iowa where you had a, and I thought because of the difficulty of getting non-resident tags, it would keep people from doing that exact thing. Which is part of the reason that I know Iowa residents, guys like you, have always kind of like, you know, fought against the idea of giving landowner tags to non-residents. I know that's been a big point of contention.
And so that whole rule, right? That whole we have this awesome resource. The second you start opening that up, and this is my thought, the second
Sure.
you start giving any non-resident landowner the ability to hunt his own ground, you are opening the floodgates for anybody with money to come in and buy any amount of land necessary. And I think they were talking at one time, the law right now, I believe, is 4 acres. So anybody can come in, jockey up 4 acres, or come in, buy that, get a tag. And then I look at that and I go, local hunting in Iowa would be devastated from a local
Sure.
standpoint. And I would almost compare it in one way, shape, or form. And I think you've probably been through this, or maybe you know someone, Pike County, Illinois. Remember when the Western Illinois boom kind of happened?
Oh, yeah.
And it was just everybody was flooding to that 3 or 4 county area and trying to get land, like outfitting went up, leasing, like all of that shit just took over. And I heard the stories.
It's still that way today. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Hard to find a spot and crazy expensive when you do find one.
Right.
And I would venture to say there's many more non-resident landowners in a place like Illinois where you can get a tag every year than there are in Iowa. I'm sure it's an issue there, but it's not as big of an issue as it would be if they changed the law. You're 100% correct. If they change that law, you're screwed. I've always been torn on this, and it's so interesting we're having this conversation because I went to Iowa this weekend with my buddy Mike Willand, and we had this conversation while we were driving either to or from about the non-resident landowner. And what sucks is like that non-resident landowner is paying taxes on that ground and then doesn't get to take full advantage of his ownership of that property, right? They can do anything else they want to do on it. They could farm it. They can rent the farm ground. They can fish on it if there's fish. They could build a house. They can do anything they want on their property that they're paying for and paying taxes on, but they can't hunt on it. It is like when I look at it from that perspective, I'm like, well, that kind of sucks. But I also understand the point of Iowa has something very special for a reason. And if you try to change what got you here, you're going to kill the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, again, you're in a no-win situation. Yeah. If it were me, I would rather keep my residents happy and keep it the way that it is versus capitulating to the rich non-residents that want to come in and buy all the land.
Right. Right.
And I'm not in charge.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's kind of my thought process too. I just feel like there are hunters now being displaced at a very high level in certain scenarios. And the only one that I can really talk about is because I live in Iowa. Right. And so that's what I'm dealing with. But
dude, we've been dealing with it here for many years. And it's funny because it's a point that Todd Graff and I have always thought about a lot, you know, and that is, I believe the biggest threat to hunting is hunters ourselves and 100%. Is lack of access. The biggest threat to hunting is there's nowhere to go. Right. I know plenty of people that would probably start hunting if I offered it to them. If I was like, hey, man, you want me to take you hunting sometime? Right. They'd be like, hell yeah, dude. I'd love to get into hunting. Like now I think more than ever. But it's like, where are you going to take them? Nobody's rushing out to be like, yeah, I'll take you to my best spot where I got this deer on camera that I got all these food plots and my stands and I've scouted. And yeah, come on with me and just shoot this deer. You know, nobody's, and everybody thinks they need more and more and more ground under their own control. They buy a piece of property, they kick everybody off, to your point. They've all been displaced. Now, where do those people go? Public lands, again, get crowded. You got some guys that are just, maybe they're too old. Maybe they just don't want to do the public thing. So they just give up. I know plenty of guys who they had one spot to go and they lost it. And they tried public and they tried doing these other things and just never had success, didn't like it. And eventually just said, screw it. I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah. What about this, like the displacement and these hunters that are getting displaced? What are your thoughts about? So I feel like there's this giant shift. It's not this beautiful bell curve that it was, where you got only a small amount of hunters have a lot of ground. So like what I call it acres per hunter, like on one end of the spectrum, the acres per hunter is going up because people are gathering more ground for less hunters. And then on the back end, you have everybody that's being displaced, having to go and fight for public or now going to maybe a farmer who lets everybody hunt. And
yeah, or they team up with a bunch of their buddies and they all pay for a lease together. And that's kind of been my history is, you know, I've typically hunted, you know, farms that are anywhere from 60 to 160 maybe on the big side, and there's always two, three, four of us in there for sure. I mean, that's never like I've had them to myself by any piece. So our acres per hunter, like I have a 100-acre lease that I share with two other guys. Two of us bring our kids with us, so there may be three, four people out there hunting on 100 acres at any given time. So we're 25 acres per person. But to your point, you get these guys that go in and buy these big, several 100-acre or 1,000-acre farms. They kick everybody off and then they just keep it for themselves. Maybe they're very close friends and family, but it's certainly not supporting the amount of hunters that it could support, So yeah, you're right, dude. I've been screaming about this for years. I don't know there's an answer. It's like putting the toothpaste back in the tube, dude. There is no answer. I can complain about it all I want, but what's going to turn the tide? How do you reverse this trend? I don't think there's a way.
Do you think that hunting culture can be changed? And this is my opinion. Like, I love big bucks, dude. I fucking love big bucks, man. Like, everybody loves big bucks.
Sure.
But I've been sitting here racking my brain for years about how to change the culture so it can be more inclusive, less infighting, and things like that. And the thing that I keep coming up with is that we need to step away from the focus on the gigantic antlers and age class and go back to the experience of hunting.
Oh,
But
dude.
who's going to do that?
Good luck, Dan.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm
Good
saying.
luck.
That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Dude, it ain't
And
happening. It's only going to get worse. I mean, it's like social media, right? The cat's out of the bag. It's only going to get bigger. It's only going to get worse. Screen time, phones, algorithms, all the shit we talked about earlier. Like, I wish there was an answer. I really do. And I've thought about this a ton. You know what I think was the catalyst for this whole thing? The one change in the hunting industry that triggered all of this. Do you know what I think it was, Dan? What do you think it was?
I'm gonna guess two things. Number one would be the availability of trail cameras.
Bingo. That was my answer.
Yep.
Trail cameras changed
Everything.
everything.
Yep.
The minute we knew what was there versus hoping what was there, everything changed. Relationships changed. Guys that brought all their buddies out to hunt and let people hunt. And
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack Fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies, and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting, and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
Shared, the deer camp and everything. Everybody was hoping they were going to shoot a big one. Maybe somebody saw one, or had an encounter or something, but nobody really knew what was there. And as soon as trail cameras came out, dude, everything changed. The minute you had a piece of property and you got a picture of that big one, you were like, son of a bitch, I ain't telling anybody. I ain't bringing my friends out here. I want to get that deer. And it's just been a cascade of changes since then. That's 100% what happened. Maybe social media and YouTube and stuff accelerated it, threw a little bit of fuel on that fire. But trail cameras, in my opinion, that was the thing. And I wonder now, looking back on it, if the pioneers of trail cameras, the first guys, like I remember Cam Tracker, the guy's name was Dan Stoneburner because he was a customer of ours when I first started working for Todd 20 years ago. Like I remember Dan sitting in his little warehouse soldering boards on the cameras and making these things, had any idea like what
What the
his
hell was going to
little
happen?
invention was going to do to the world.
Like, I am. I keep thinking about my kids, dude. Like, I'm thinking about, is my son going to have a place to hunt? And the answer is yes on public land, right? So, but what's going to happen to public land? Right. We have all these people now who are going to eventually flood. And you said it, it's going to keep getting worse. Right.
Is it going to keep getting worse and then eventually get better? I mean, there is definitely a overall, I mean, the numbers don't lie. There is a bell curve of the number of hunters and the age of hunters. They're getting older. They're dying. They're stopping hunting, and we are not producing hunters on the front end of this thing in the numbers that we would need to replace the ones that we're losing. And
Right.
it's not going to happen in a year, but I mean, what does this look like in 10 years, 15, 20 years? I don't know. So the question is the demand in the competition going to be as high in 20 years as it is today? I don't know the answer to that, but I mean, you can look at license, age of license sales or whatever, and it goes, way up. So I don't know.
The thing about that,
But
though,
dude, it's
is
so interesting that you have those same thoughts because I literally think the exact same thing. Where are my kids going to hunt? I struggle right now to find places to bring them. And I know that, a couple of the places that I hunt, dude, I'm hanging on to by the skin of my teeth. They could be gone tomorrow. And I know that, and so I'm trying to, obviously take advantage of everything that I can in the meantime. But yeah, if I woke up tomorrow and, one of my landowners sells or two of them, sell their property because it's worth a pile of money and they just want to ride off in the sunset, like I'm out, And I was like, okay, then what? Right. To your point, dude, it's public land or I'm door knocking and begging people for a spot to take my kids.
And I wouldn't even, I don't even know if I would pick. I would only be asking for my kids at that point. I wouldn't even be really worried about myself. I mean, so here's a theory that I have, right? You have this older generation of, and I'm going to loop in Western public hunting, public land hunting to this as well. You got all these people bitching and complaining about how they're seeing so many people out west. And they're say what?
Oh, you're good.
Oh, so a ton of people complaining about how, public land is crowded and all this stuff. Well, I think the younger generation isn't sticking to just their state. I think the younger generation of hunting is traveling more, taking, multiple trips a year. Meanwhile, the older generation, they never did that. They always stuck. Like, I'm going to just assume that 60 years old and older, if you've bought a license, you're probably only buying a license. Or the majority of people who take, multiple states hunts compared to the 20 to 30 year olds is much lower. Right. So, I think what you're seeing is there is more hunters taking advantage of all of the tags that are available, and there's it's going to seem like there's more people, but there's actually less people doing it, right? So as that generation gets older, there's probably still not going to be follow up behind that as much. But now you take that away as states like Nebraska, South Dakota, Colorado, all of these places that used to have over-the-counter opportunities are now turning those to draws and shit. And now we have a line.
They had to, right? Just because of the influx of people coming.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, there's a sustainable number of hunters that you can have in the field and in harvest. And especially the last few years, it seems like, you know, there's been just massive outbreaks of disease, you know, in different areas. It's really decimated some of these higher populations where everybody was flocking in there to go, you know, to go hunting. So I think that's the only recourse that people have, that these agencies have, is to try to stem that flow. And you know, I've talked about this a lot in the past too, but I mean, I think we would all agree you can attribute the influx of out-of-state hunting to just the ease of getting information now. It's right 100%. At your fingertips. I pull up Hunt Stand, whatever, and dude, there's all my every public land in the state of Iowa. Okay, great. I want to go there. Here's the next state. Like, yep. Back in the day, that was really hard information to get. You know, even if you look at before the internet, you look back in the 90s, like my dad used to go to Ontario moose hunting. And it was like ordering topo maps from a map company where you'd have to say, I want this quadrant right here, this map with, you know, and they're big, giant laminated things. And, you know, you're looking at those, you're reading books, magazines, travel atlases to figure out how to get around. Like, it was much more intense process to learn how to do it, where now everything's at your fingertips, man. One Google search, one YouTube video, I can figure out. Sweet. These are the states with over-the-counter tags, or this is when I need to apply this, how many points I need. Here's all the charts and graphs, and they're going to tell me the best areas with the biggest deer and the most land. Then I pull up my e-scouting map. I can e-scout everything, drop a bunch of pins where I want to go and hit the road and show up and start hunting. Yeah. Like, it's easier than it's ever been, which is awesome because it's allowed people to have some really amazing opportunities that they previously didn't really have.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely also, it's burst the bubble of the people that were doing it first.
First,
you know, who were like, this is a hidden gem.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden they're like, well, son of a bitch, the gig's up, right?
Yeah. I took my first out-of-state hunt in 2014, I believe it was, or something like that. Yeah. And so shit, 10 years ago. Wow. I went to Nebraska. And I had to use maps, physical maps. Like, I don't know when Onyx came out or those other places, but
I mean, it had to be like
close to that.
I'm trying to think when I started going. I went to Kansas. I literally just today, I got a memory popped up. It was 8 years ago. I was in Kansas. We went out to scout some public and we went out to turkey hunt. So today must have been like opening day of that early archery season that Kansas has for turkeys. So I got a thing that popped up. So 8 years ago today. And I think, like, I'd always done a little bit of Wisconsin stuff. But for me, like, Wisconsin's 45 minutes from my front door. I could be in Wisconsin. So, like,
right.
I don't know. We had a cabin up there. I didn't feel like I was really traveling.
For that one, yeah.
Out of state. That was just like, you know, the neighbor, we just went there to hunt. Like, everybody from Illinois used to go to Wisconsin to hunt when I was a kid. Yeah. So, but I think my first like true, like, I'm going to go out of state on my own, do some public, was probably like, 2017, something like that. 2016, 2017, somewhere in there.
Yeah. And it was more of a chore to plan and know where boundaries were. I mean, I had to look at a plat book and guess if I was in the right spot, right? Okay. Am I one section in or am I two sections in, right? I gotta find the road here.
I have a plat book at home that I just found. I was doing some cleaning that stuff over the winter. I have a plat book that Todd Prignitz gave me.
Oh, Todder.
Of like Effingham area in Illinois. Cause he used to go down there with Wally and hunt public ground. That's what they were doing when I first met him. Before he still lived in Michigan, before he moved to Iowa. And when he moved to Iowa, he was like never going to go back and hunt Illinois public land again. Why wouldn't you do that? So he sent me the plat book, and he wrote a note in it that said, "If you can't kill a deer with this information, you should go work at Archery Talk." I still
That's
have it. I
funny.
found it the other day, or like in an old tote bin.
That's funny. That's funny. And so, really what this is coming down to is these internal thoughts about the future of hunting, what direction this is going, because I will say that digital mapping and I'm guessing even like Onyx Hunt Stand, they played a gigantic role in ease of use for non-residents to come to a place, right? There was no more honey holes. There's no more secrets anymore. And then when somebody like me or you or the hunting public or whoever talks about it, it's just verified how easy it is. Or when someone from Meat Eater writes an article about, oh my God, you gotta, the easiest way to hunt, be a non-resident hunter or whatever, however they word that shit, and then it's just verified. And then it's like, well, shit, if this guy can do it, I can do it.
I could do it, dude. 100%.
Yeah. And so
100%. That's kind of how I got started, realistically. You know,
100%.
I was talking with Graf yesterday. We were filming something, and I asked him a question, like, if you could go hunt with like one, I said kind of like YouTube, you know, person, like who would it be? Because we're getting ready to go to the Wisconsin Open Season Expo tomorrow. So we got a booth there, and we do our little like man on the street, like ask people questions, right? And that's one of the questions I want to ask. If you could go, you know, hunt. And Todd said he would go hunt with Cam Haynes, which is probably a good time. And I was like, honestly, who I would go hunt with, and isn't a YouTuber, but I said freaking Jared from Whitetail Adrenaline,
Oh, dude.
right? He's the OG. Jared was THP before THP. Right, he was the original public land warrior, you know, selling DVDs. And THP, I mean, for better or worse, just copied what Jared was doing and put it on YouTube instead of making people buy a DVD to watch it, you know. But yeah, I mean, guys have been doing it for a while. And I remember talking to Jared years ago, and he's like, dude, I'm killing myself because I put out a DVD and then I show up the next year to go hunt, and there's 10 trucks, you know, where I'm at, and they all got Whitetail Adrenaline stickers in the window, you know, because I've inspired all these people to try to go to Kansas or, you know, wherever he was going, and because he showed people that, like, hey, public land's got some big deer on it, you know. And he's like, well, this kind of sucks, you know. I'm kind of like shooting myself in the foot a little bit because I'm making it more popular, but then I go do it, and now I've made more competition for myself.
Do you think there will ever be a time where, I'm not going to say the tag prices will go down, but a time where people start to, they go away, they're going out west, they just run into too many people or a non-resident hunt in any state. They just run into so many people. The word gets out that all this stuff is overcrowded. Then there's a period where nobody, like people start to peel off because their experience isn't as good. And then
It
people are
starts to
like,
come back.
it starts to come back. Like
Sure.
I
I
can see a
mean,
wave like that happening.
doesn't everything kind of work that way? Goes in a cycle, right? Whether it's animal populations or the popularity of certain things. Hell, all these kids are running around with mullets now. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I feel like everything in life, it's like a pendulum. It's just swinging back and forth and back and forth. And yeah, at a certain point, I feel like you're exactly right. Like, people are going to get a little bit tired of the public land thing, and you know, maybe they're going to stop going as much, which is going to make it maybe a little better. And then people are going to figure out, oh shit, it's better again. And then everybody's going to go, and then you're going to be, you know, it's just going to keep moving back and forth for sure. The only real way to try to, you know, fix some of that is with what Iowa does with really limiting the number of tags. You know, I think it's really it is the only way to do it. You know, I think I went to Kentucky for my first time in maybe 2018 or 19, we went down there and hunted. And I ran into a couple locals, and maybe like one or two. We were on a big piece of property. It was 10,000 acres or something like that. Like, and I didn't barely run into anybody. Didn't really see much for sign and trail cameras. We went back in 2023, I think we went back. And dude, the number of trail cameras, the amount of people in every parking lot was just like, just in like a 4 year maybe like period was unbelievable. I was like, holy shit. The last time I came down here, it wasn't like this.
It's nuts, man. Now, do you think that some of this pressure is obviously the number as a whole? Like, if you're a resident and you buy a tag, and I'm a non-resident and I buy a tag, well, there's one non-resident tag and one resident tag, or whatever I said. And so a tag is a tag from a statistic standpoint, but the perceived pressure comes probably when I'm a non-resident. I want to come at the best time, which is November. You're the resident. You want to come at the best time, you know? And so there's probably an opportunity there for people to come outside of the heavy pressured area to a piece of public land that just doesn't have anybody on it. Maybe, 'cause the 1 year I went out west for mule deer, I've hunted opening week. It was pretty busy. I've hunted the week before the rut starts, pretty busy. And then I've also hunted the 2 weeks in between that, and it was fairly calm because people blew their load opening week, and then they blew their, and so it's just a matter of when you go and what species you're hunting and things like that. Obviously, everybody wants to catch the elk rut, so they're going to go during the peak of the elk rut, which is going to cause, pressure. So I don't know. It's
Yeah, so I hunted Iowa in 2019, and I hunted a northern zone. And I went in October, I think twice, and pretty big piece of ground, a couple thousand acres. I never saw anyone else bow hunting in October when I was there. There wasn't another truck in a parking lot. I never saw a person. I had one guy stop and talk to me in a parking lot, and I think he might have been bow hunting in the area or something. He just stopped and talked. It was a super nice guy and showed me a bunch of pictures of deer they'd killed out of this piece of public over the years. He was an Iowa resident, but he was more from a couple hours south of where we were at. But that October was, dude, it was awesome. It was like ghost town. I came back to hunt a long weekend in November, and every parking lot had a truck in it when I went through. Now, what I will say is like one truck in a parking lot doesn't mean jack shit. Like there wasn't, it wasn't the pressure that I've seen in Wisconsin or Illinois or Kentucky or other places that I've been in. Like it was noticeably more than what it was when I was there in October, but I still was at the point where like, so I went to the parking lot where I wanted to hunt. There was nobody in that lot. So like when I hunted Iowa last time, I was never in the parking lot with another human being during my entire, three trips I think I made out there. I never saw another person in the field that was hunting. I showed up one night to hunt, and there was a truck in the parking lot, and there was a couple guys going out bird hunting, pheasant hunting or something. And they were like, "Oh man, where are you going?" And I told them, and they were going nowhere near where I was at. And they're like, "Oh man, we'll leave you alone. We'll just go down to another spot, like whatever." And I was like, "You guys, you're fine. Like we're not even close to each other. I don't care. You can go bird hunt all you want." And they're like, "No man, it's cool. We'll just go down here. We'll leave you
Iowa
alone."
nice, dude. Iowa nice.
So, I don't know what it's going to be like next time I go. I guess we'll see. But I mean, the reality is, I think they haven't really increased non-resident tag allocation, which is good. So there's not going to be as many out-of-state assholes like me. The question is, how many in-state assholes that have been displaced are going to be there, right? I mean,
100%.
that's really the thing.
Yeah, I met a guy. So this year in Iowa, I stayed at a campground with my dad because one of the farms that I hunt, I have to travel 3 hours as an Iowa resident because I want a certain, I want a certain experience just like everybody does. And I got lucky and found this piece, and so I traveled to it. My dad brought his camper down, and we ran into a group of guys who were also like 3 or 4 hours away from Iowa, from, you know, and they said they come down here. And so there's a ton of that as well. I mean, I just would think like in, you should be able to find, obviously this is not true, but you should be able to find some place to hunt in the county that you live in. But that's not true. Like in Iowa, no. that used to be true, but now any state, you've got to residents are even having to travel.
I'm extremely lucky to have two pieces close to home, but everything else I've had to travel. It's same way in Illinois, a couple hours, you know, for us, it's usually two and a half to one of my spots. When I was hunting down by Clinton to place last year, I think it was like 3.5 to get down to his place to hunt down there. We're traveling, you know, when I was driving down to Kentucky, that was 6 or 7 hours for me to get down there. You know, just where we went in Iowa was, I don't know, four and a half for me to get over there. I mean, traveling is just part of hunting, I feel like, nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like people that don't have to travel to hunt, that have shit that's close or that, like, live like on ground that they can hunt out their back door, like, they truly are blessed. Like, 100%. You don't know how nice that is until you have it. And then when you don't have it, you're like, dude, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. What about, I want to kind of go back to some of these social media accounts or some of these, maybe it's a podcast or it's a social media account or something like that we talked about earlier, who's calling out a lot of bullshit. All right. Do they have a place in this environment, like calling out some of the bullshit, saying, hey, the reason that this is happening is because you support this group of people who did that. Or like yin and yang type shit. There's the us, and then there's the opposite of us. Sure. I mean, is that necessary? Is it necessary, you think?
I mean, is anything necessary, really? Like, I have to eat to survive and sleep. And, you know, there's certain things that are necessities. They're like, is social media even a necessity, like in the big scheme of the world? You know, it's funny because I look back at my younger self in my younger life, and I feel like if social media came around when I was in my early and mid 20s, I could see myself being one of those guys and running one of those accounts. You know, I had those same thoughts. And still do sometimes, but I think as you get older and you start seeing the world in a different light, in a different perspective, and you have kids, I really do think it changes the way you look at things. And for me personally, I try not to be quite so negative and just like, imagine if you're one of those dudes, right? And all you do, you're like, your sole purpose is to just shit on everything and shit on everyone and make fun of everyone and like, just be angry. And you do it and you love it because you get that high from all the likes and shares and everything of people commenting on it. But like, that can't just be good for you mentally, right? Yeah. Where you're just going through life, literally just looking for faults, looking to pick at things, looking to make fun of something, looking for an excuse to be angry and be outraged. Yeah. You know, a lot of those counts, dude, I love a good meme and a good reel as much as anybody. And I used to follow all of those accounts. And when they first started kind of coming out, I was like, this shit's hilarious. And then, you know, as time went on and my use of social media changed, you know, what I realized was I was following, and not just in the hunting space, but in every, you know, aspect of life, I was following all these pages and all these people that like, just always kind of put me in a bad mood, made me angry about something, you know? And everybody would blame like, it's the social media algorithm, you know, that just wants to show you this stuff to make you enraged. And I'm like, yeah, but I could just go unfollow them. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, when I go on social media, I want to see what my friends and my family are doing. And maybe people have a more positive message that's going to more positively impact me. Mm-hmm. So honestly, dude, I stopped following all those accounts. Okay. Like Copper Plated Sixes and Make Hunting Great Again and Archery Hooligan and all these ones where I was like, you guys are just a bunch of angry, spiteful, like, pricks. You know, I wonder, like, how old are they? Are they married? Do they have kids? Like, what is their take on life? Or are they Are they young Justin Czar, 24, full of piss and vinegar, with no real aspect of how the world really works and what I want to get out of life, because I 100% that could have been me, in my 20s, like shitting all over everybody and everything because I think everyone's a moron except me,
But is there a way, let's take away the delivery, but share the message, right? And so instead of saying, well, this people blew this out and blah, 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 and it was more of a positive fact, a matter of fact, maybe some statistics to back it up and things like that. Is that a better way to call out certain things and say, well, hey, maybe the direction of the hunting industry isn't going the way you think it is because of these things.
I mean, maybe, but I mean, you could always try, but the question is, what do people respond to? Unfortunately, in today's world, I feel like they only respond to like sensationalism, making things, crazy that people are going to respond to that's going to make them angry. It's just it's what we're all looking for on social media. So, I certainly think there's a way to call attention to stuff. The hard part is, regardless how much attention these guys call to it with their memes and reels, like, what's anybody doing about it? Again, I go back to what I said earlier. They're just shit talkers. They're just talking shit. They're not doing anything. They're not making any sort of positive contribution. They're not offering any sort of solution that is realistic. They're just shit talking online, and they love the way it feels when people tell them they're right, and they validate them, and they get all their likes, and it's awesome for them. And dude, I don't know. I feel like if I got to a point where like that's what I was doing in life to feel validated, I'd be like, this sucks. I thought life was more than this, man. I don't know.
And then at the same time, so okay, I was at a Poma conference a handful of years ago. You familiar with that
Yeah,
organization? Okay.
Professional Outdoor Media Association.
Exactly. And so I was talking to the director of, I don't know if it was social media, but like director of marketing for a state that hired a group of people, I think you can fill in the blanks here, to
Sure.
come and do a hunt there.
Yeah, to promote hunting in their
Promote
state.
hunting in
Yeah,
that
I
state.
remember all this stuff.
Yep. And so the next year, there was a huge outrage because that specific, some of the specific areas that those people hunted and some of the, and the amount of tags that were sold in that state, it worked. And she even said to me, I did this and I will do this every year if I have to, because it generated so much money for the state. Okay. I mean, that's the goal of the marketing department, right? It's to
Of
sell
course.
tags, right? And so, but it did have a perceived negative impact for local hunters that have been hunting these spots year after year. So is there a responsibility or a duty then to some of the people who are in positions like ours to tell 100% the truth, and maybe even to go as far as, I don't know, and this is just me thinking out loud at this point, apologize for causing that much disruption to the field.
The problem with that argument is it's public land, dude. It doesn't belong to these guys that thought that they had their little honey hole and their little secret spot. As much as it sucks and as much as it's been done to me and to my friends and to other people, like that's the reality of the situation. It's not yours. Just because nobody else was there and you were able to capitalize on it for so many years and it was awesome, like that's great. I mean, enjoy the good times you had, but dude, it ain't your property. So it's hard to get mad. I mean, I guess it's easy to get mad, right? It's easy for people to be pissed off, and I get it. I'd be pissed off too. I remember 2 years ago we were at NWTF show, and so my buddy Mike that I was just with this last weekend, he hunts a ton of public ground in Illinois, and he has for over a decade now, right? And pre like THP, right? Because everybody wants to look to those guys as kind of the guys that blew up public land. And before they came on the scene, Dude, he had a great thing going. There was never anybody around. It was a lot easier. It was a lot better. And THP started getting popular, and everybody was like, "Oh, damn! This public land isn't as bad as that we all thought it was." There was a stigma. When I was young, I never even set foot on public land.
You thought it
But
was
if anybody was
garbage.
like, everyone was like, "Let's go hunt public," I'd be like, "Ew, gross! I don't want to do that. Like, who does that? It's terrible." And the reality was, it wasn't terrible. But the guys that knew it wasn't terrible weren't saying shit to
Exactly.
anybody, right? They were trying to keep it a secret. And I remember we're at NWTF, and I was t my buddy Mike texted me, and he's like, "Oh, you're at Nashville, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And he's like, "If you see the guys from THP, tell them I said thanks for fucking up public land." And like 2 minutes later, Zach Fairbaugh is walking by. I'm like, "Zach, come here. I want to show you this text message from my buddy." And I took out my phone. I literally showed him, like, "This is what people think."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Dude, I get it." Then they get it all the time. Unfortunately,
Oh,
they
yeah.
bear the brunt of, the public land, whatever increase in popularity, distinctly falls on those guys for better or for worse. It's easy to focus on the negatives. The positives, it's probably created a lot of awesome opportunities for people that wouldn't have had them
100%.
before. I've hunted out of state public ground now in Kentucky, in Iowa, in Kansas, in Nebraska. Like, and I've had some great hunts and great times, and it's been challenging, and it's not as awesome as you hope it would be every time, right? But like, that's probably something that I wouldn't have taken full advantage of before those guys brought light to it. So again, I think it's so easy to focus on like the negative. Oh, there was more guys, and there was more this, and there was more that. But dude, I still had a blast. I had fun. I saw animals. I haven't killed anything yet, but I've been pretty damn close to killing some nice bucks, a couple times. And those are memories that I'll have forever. I hope it literally. So my plan is, I'm gonna hopefully draw an Iowa tag next year. And then after that, when I start applying for points again, I'm gonna start getting points for my kids. And my hope is that at some point in time, before I'm too old and decrepit to go run around public land in Iowa, that I'll be able to go with my boys. The next time I draw a tag after next year, like, my oldest kid will probably be 20 or 21, and his brother will be 15 or 16. So I'm like, sweet. How awesome would it be for the three of us to all draw Iowa tags and go pound around on public land for a week, at some point down the road. So, there's a lot of positives there. No, not everybody's going to kill a big buck. Not everybody's going to get an opportunity. You're going to have to work for it. You're going to have to do a little extra scouting and walking and finagling around the other guys that are there. But to fuck enjoy the process, man. Quit bitching about everything.
I mean, I feel like a blanket statement. I'm not one for blanket statements, right? But I think a blanket statement could work for this whole thing, right? Anytime someone wants to bitch about something, right? Maybe not, because I really do feel that there are some things that definitely need attention in this world, like along the lines of conservation and things like that. But like, just shut the fuck up.
I agree. I
If
agree.
you're not
That's
going to
a
do something, if you're not going to
yeah.
do something, shut the fuck up. Like
Yes.
I'm done. Like I don't say that directly to my kids, but the other day there was my son, and I got to say this quick because I got a meeting here in a second, but my son was bitching to me about this kid that he sits by and he's always touching him. I go, tell him to stop. Okay, I told him to stop. He's not listening to me. Tell the bus driver. Well, the bus driver's scary. I'm like, well, you got to tell somebody. And then I told my oldest son, I'm like, Mac, tell this kid to not do that. Well, we don't want to. I'm just like, then shut up. Like, I don't want to listen to you, bitch, if you're not going to do anything to solve this
About it,
problem. And so,
100%.
that just kind of seems like everything. There's got to be more conversation. I just think as of right now, with social media and shit, there is more infighting between hunters than there ever has been before. And there It's
And
so
the only reason is because there's the ability to do it.
exactly.
It's not like hunters wouldn't have been infighting 40 and 50 years ago. Nobody had the ability to do it. You could fight with the guy at the local bow shop or the local club, but you couldn't go online and fight with some dude from another state, you know? But it's now that we have the ability, we're doing it. But again, we act like this is something that never would have happened in the past. Like humans have been fighting with each other since the dawn of mankind.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just one of those things. I've been thinking a lot about this today specifically because I just got
Yeah.
fired up thanks to
The hard part,
dumbass.
dude, I think is this access piece, you know, and as private ground continues to get gobbled up and more and more fewer people are controlling more ground and displacing these hunters. Like we talk about hunter recruitment, recruiting people. Where the fuck am I going to bring them? I got nowhere to bring them. I'm sharing a lease with three, four other guys. I barely have enough room to bring my own kids, let alone a friend or a stranger or somebody that is interested in going hunting, you know? And so that's the hardest part. And you know what sucks is like the biggest champions of hunting, rah-rah hunting, look at me, look at all my habitat and conservation and all the great things I do for hunting, are the rich people that control the most amount of ground, right? They're the ones that are doing this, but they keep telling themselves they're doing a good thing. They're controlling all this land. They're doing habitat improvement. Their, you know, populations are flourishing. And look at me, I'm a champion of hunting, but I control 10,000 acres of ground that I don't let anybody else go on that used to have 100 or more people running around that 100 acres, you know? And it's like nobody wants to look in the mirror and be like, yeah, maybe I'm part of the freaking problem here, you know? And it sucks
100%.
because they're the people at the top of the pyramid that we all look up to, that everybody wants to be, you know? Everybody wants to be whomever, you name them. There's a bunch of them in Iowa, right? How much ground do they control and how many people are hunting it, you know?
That's a fact,
Unless you got
man.
a freaking, you know, Grammy on your wall or a freaking, or a Super Bowl trophy, you're not getting an invite to go hunt with those guys.
That's a fact. That's a fact, dude. So, well, Justin, man, I really appreciate the vent session that we had
Of
today.
course.
I don't know if we solved any problems. We
I
talked
can't
about
wait to
them.
come to Iowa and kill one of your deer next year,
Hey,
Dan.
dude, there's no gates on Iowa, man. You come whenever you want.
Yeah, I can
Come
come.
turkey
I just
hunting
can't
with
get a
me.
tag.
Come turkey hunting with me. If you want to pay, I think, what, $250 for a turkey tag.
Yeah. Baseball season starting, my man. No more
There you
time to
go.
turkey hunt.
There you go. All right, dude. Hey, have a good one.
Thanks, buddy.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.